welcome back to The Expansive. So excited to be doing this pod today. We are in the midst of making some huge changes to the pod, and it's taken us so many months to get here. And Eric and I have been talking offline, and we're just super excited. So much good energy going on, and we have an exciting episode ahead for you. But before we start, Errico, happy birthday for turning 40. How are you, my friend?
Hey, brother. Yeah, I'm good, thanks. For those listening, I turned 40 on the 8th of May. We're recording on the 15th of May.
Yes.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah. It's been an interesting week since then. Lots of reflection, which I'm excited to share with you today. But the best thing that has happened in my week, by the way, so far, is that Atlas has gone through his, like, so, you know, we've been enrolling him in different classes.
I saw.
So now he's done his second class, and he was top in class again for this class. He won the Superstar Award again. In fact, he scored 99 out of 100, which is a percentage that's never been scored before in the class. Yeah. Top performers.
This house is all about top performers. Tell us. I mean, he's obviously taken after you or your wife. I think he's often taken after your wife. I mean, she's the high performer.
I was going to say, marriage. It's very, very uncharacteristically of you to give me props for.
I forgot what I was doing. Sorry, I should go back.
Sorry, out of character.
Out of character. Sorry. I didn't mean to give you a compliment. I'm so sorry. That's brilliant. Well done, Atlas.
Yeah, it's
well
been amazing. What's been happening for you?
Good. I mean, I was on the farm now with my parents, and the dogs. I mean, I spent all my time with the dogs. You know, my mom phones me before I arrive on the farm. She's like, I just want to let you know, I don't want you giving the dogs too many snacks. I'm like, Mom, I'm not hearing this phone call. Bye-bye. Can't hear you. Ciao, bye. Like, what do you want me to do? Not give snacks. That's my love language. So I've loaded them up with snacks. And one of the dogs is a little bit overweight, Toby. He's so cute. But, you know, I used to tell Superdog, I make money to buy you snacks. You want more snacks, boy?
Oh, yes.
There's no rules to snacks. You can have as many snacks as you want. In fact, I think a fantastic business, and it's a business that I've been playing around with, is I want to supply Uber Eats around the world with dog food, but great dog meals. And so when you order your Uber meal, at the end, as you check out, the question should come up, do you have a dog? Do you want to order food for your dog?
Mm.
Because the dog also must get takeaways, man. Why must you be the only one and he must eat pellets or she must eat pellets?
That's fully bullshit.
So, yeah. I've just had a really, really great time with my parents and just with the dogs all the time. And yeah, just so fantastic. Mm. You know, and also I just see the global movement around dog love. It's just so increasing at such a pace because of social media. Yeah, it's just so fantastic. Really, really fantastic. I'm so happy.
Every time I see photos of you on the farm, two things. One is I think back to COVID days straight away because we did so many conversations of you being there.
Yeah.
And the second That's is like right. that forest just looks so majestic because you have those beautiful, like, tall trees. It just looks such a centering place.
No, it's look, I mean, it's the second largest indigenous forest in South Africa to Knysna, and the trees in there are literally, I don't know, hundreds and hundreds of years old. Like, it's just unbelievable. And then you look at all the research around trees, that they're actual social creatures.
Yeah,
social creatures. Mm. They look after each other. They warn each other. They share nutrients with each other. There's actually alphas, and there's like, oh my God. I mean, what is going on? There's like communities of trees. And before I knew this, I remember driving around in Bali on my scooter and literally stopping my scooter and looking at the tree. And I'm like thinking to myself, I've never seen a tree like this, like a 1,000-year-old tree, like just majestic.
Mm.
So being around the trees and also being with dogs and then having my mom's food, I mean, I think it must be heaven in many different ways. You know, being at the farm, it's a blessing.
Yeah.
Such a blessing to have it. I'm so grateful for it. Yeah. So, but besides that, I'm about to start a great trip. I'm on my way to Durban, Dubai, Abu Dhabi, Saudi Arabia, Turkey, and then back to Cape Town. So looking forward to it. Yeah. I'm a Middle Eastern tour.
When do you leave?
Loading. And today. Today I go to Hermanus. Tomorrow I go to Durban.
Got it.
So yeah, a lot of exciting things happening. Mm. And then above that, all of that, I mean, have you seen what happened with ChatGPT and releasing Chat 4.0?
Amazing.
Dude.
Absolutely amazing.
Dude.
Yeah.
What just happened? Oh my God. oh my God. I've just changed all the videos in my talks because all my videos in my talks are null and void. Last night, I've given my digital team, load this video. And then she's like 10 minutes later, I'm like, load this video. She got six videos. She sent me six videos this morning because the last night I was on TikTok, like, oh my God. I'm like, oh my God.
If you're an AI keynote speaker, like this, like constant, like every day you have to update your slides. It's just moving so quickly. And obviously, like one of the, so what happened, ChatGPT announced, I think two big things, according to me at least. One would be that their base model is now ChatGPT-4 for everyone. So even if you're free, you get access to the stronger model. And it's not a small thing because ChatGPT-4 is like 10 times stronger than ChatGPT-3. So like the increase in complexity that you get from the model itself is huge. But secondly, is that it can now reason multimodally. So it can go across audio and video and text. And that's a huge thing, you know, like I was actually testing it yesterday. I was walking in the park with the dogs. Let me quickly tell you this. So I was walking with the dogs in the park and, you know, we always do the same kind of route and we get to this one spot. We chill there for a while. And I see this guy sort of like, I think he's from the farm across from the park and he's walking and he's doing some sort of like inspection. And so he's walking and I can see him coming towards us, like nothing weird, you know, people walk past you all the time. But the moment he sees Jaeger, he kind of like retreats. And of course, the moment he does that, the dogs pick up on this like hesitancy or this like nervousness.
Sure, fear.
And like their ears perk, like everything, the dynamics just change all of a sudden. They like hone in on this dude. And I distract them and we move on and like, you know, disaster averted. Anyway, so I'm speaking to ChatGPT about this. And I'm like, you know, we just had this encounter. Like I tell the story and then I go, well, you know, how would you retell the story if you had to tell it in a better way? If you had to use like Malcolm Gladwell type language, et cetera, et cetera. Let me just quickly read you like a very small part of that because it was so brilliant. So, you know, sometimes it indulges a little bit, but just listen to this. I found myself at the familiar park where I often walk my two dogs. The air was already warm, a reminder that the day would only get hotter. Like even that sentence is just so good. The air was already warm, a reminder that the day would get hotter. This park with its winding paths and gentle stream has been a sanctuary for us for years. We know every nook and cranny, every tree and bend. As we meandered along the stream, the dog's tail wagged in joyful rhythm. The tranquility of the morning was suddenly interrupted when a man appeared on the path ahead. This was a dog park, a place where canine encounters were to be expected. Yet his reaction was unexpected. He froze, his body language radiating hesitation. And in an instant, the dynamic shifted. My dogs, usually friendly and curious, sensed his unease. Their ears perked up and they became noticeably more alert, their posture stiffening. The man's apprehension seemed to trigger a primal response in them. In a moment, this could have easily escalated. And then it just goes on and on and on. But like, it sounds like a novel. I was reading this to Dan. I was like, I loosely spoke about this to ChatGPT. I said, find the lesson in this. And then the lesson it also drew out from this was that there's this invisible communication that happens between animals and humans. And that we don't need words for that even. And I was just like, this is so, like, I could use this in a keynote. That's how good it is.
Yeah.
It's like, it's wow, you know?
I saw also the 4.0 has got this incredible human tonality of surprise and delight. And so when you're talking to it, it doesn't sound like a robot at all. It's just, it's speaking to you like somebody that's warm and engaging. This is the intimacy economy. Look at that just happening right in front of our eyes. Yeah, it's just unbelievable. They also had the blind guy walking around London and the OpenAI, the ChatGPT tells it to, okay, put your hand up to flag the cab. The cab's coming. Okay, put your hand up. Okay, the cab stopped. Okay, now you can get in.
That's amazing.
I'm like every blind person in the world. Like think about that. You're blind and now all of a sudden you have somebody decoding the future. I mean, what? And then the people that were also speaking in Italian and Spanish to each other and then all of a sudden just translating. Siri 18, iOS 18 and Siri is going to be the game changer of game changers here.
Do you know that Galaxy AI does that already though?
Yeah. But on the WhatsApp it does, right? Not in the actual
On a call. Like, so when Galaxy AI came out, I tested this with Dan.
Yeah.
Even if she doesn't have a Galaxy phone, it doesn't matter, or like an Android, it doesn't matter what phone she has. It does everything on my side. So you talk, it translates through Galaxy AI and it speaks it to them and then translates it back. It's It, dude, it's brilliant. Absolutely brilliant.
Just think about language schools.
No, it's...
like coding schools. Like, think about all the repercussions. Like, why would I want to learn a language now? I'm going to Japan. I don't need to learn the Japanese. I'm just going to have my phone with me. Come on.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Yeah.
Look, this is this episode's... Look, we, I think what we should do is we should make an episode about generative AI. I'm putting a new talk together called AI Frontiers about multidimensional AI.
Mm.
And yesterday I bumped into a term called regenerative AI. Like, it's now stepped up from generative AI to regenerative AI. And regenerative AI, in a very quick summary of all, I only understand a little bit of it, but it's able to predict situations in real life with limitless different strategies. So, for example, there's a huge storm arriving. With regenerative AI, it can give you as many different permutations of what the storm can do in multimodal ways. So in video, in talk, in text, it's telling you all the repercussion options. So that's scenario planning that futurists do. All scenario planning is regen. It's like, and it's on time. It's like, it's constantly changing in front of you. Okay, this is what happened. Okay, we have different variations. Okay, they have different. Regenerative AI is like, I didn't even get my head around generative AI.
Yeah.
Let alone regenerative AI. Yeah. Anyway, so
Listen, it's quite clear that we have to, as we move forward, have a AI segment in the pod where we can just briefly talk about the things that are happening, because it's so interesting to start with. But on top of that, it really is going to change everything, like
everything.
And it's so difficult to know where it's going, but we get these glimpses into what it might look like.
Yeah.
And the most important thing isn't that you worry about what the future is going to be. It's just that you get on board. Get on board. Get excited.
Yes. Yeah.
Use it.
Yeah.
Find ways to use it. We did an event last...
Look, one other thing we must talk about.
Yeah.
Oh, yes. Tell me about the event. I want to hear about the event.
Well, just quickly. So we had an event last week called The Age of Change, which is the title for my new book as well. And...
Oh, nice.
Yeah. Have I not told you?
No, well, Age of Change. I love
Age of Change.
Title.
Yeah,
that's very good.
So,
very good.
So that's the. There was also the call. The what the event was about, and we spoke about artificial intelligence up front, and then I spoke about the process for adapting to artificial intelligence, and people couldn't get enough. And everyone is trying to figure out what does it look like for them. How do they use it? Because it still feels like a very overwhelming thing to deal with. And,
it is.
And it's often quite difficult to think about the practical application. But I don't know if you've seen this. Just, you know, Ethan Mollick, who's like this like big Gen AI guy, he says AI is going to come to you. Like, don't worry about like finding all the tools. It's going to come to you. And so yesterday I was playing on Spotify. Have you seen the Spotify AI DJ?
No.
Yeah. So like it listens, it takes all your like, you know, and Spotify is great at algorithms to start with.
Yeah.
But so it takes all of your listening preferences. And then you have this DJ that's like, hey, Eric, today I'm going to, you know, start you off with like something quite chilled, whatever. And then he plays like a couple of songs. He's like, okay, let's move on to something that like would really suit you for a Thursday. Here's Panic at the Disco, like proper like radio DJ playing your best tunes for you. So like even just doing that, you are using artificial intelligence and it's coming to you. It's
of course.
Everything. It's going to be everything.
It's coming to you. You know? Yeah.
Yeah.
I was watching yesterday of one of the TikToks that I've asked my digital team to do was the move to zero marginal costs for physical tasks. So he said, look, now what you do is you take these robots that Tesla has got and you take all the data from all the cars and you put them into the robots. The robots already have millions of hours of real life data that they have already automatically learned from all the cars that are giving data back. And so I just bought $10,000 worth of stock of Tesla this morning after watching that TikTok, because he said the EV market is switching because it's becoming commoditized. But what's going to happen is Tesla's going to switch its business model and focus on the robots and take all the data from the cars, load it up into the robots, and everybody will have a robot. He says by 2030, everybody will have a robot, which means that all factory work and all that goes down to almost zero because your robots eventually get paid off and nothing. But, here's the big but, is that what they've started to do now, with limbs. So people that have got missing limbs are able to put on an unbelievably futuristic prosthetic, right? But this prosthetic now has got wiring in it that tells you when to feel pain and when to feel heat and cold, okay? But now if you add all of that into a robot itself, it starts to feel pain. So now, hang on a second. So now if a robot can relay pain to you and you're not involved in the situation, it can self have logical pain. Now what you start doing is you start to discuss, what does sentient mean? Like, at what part is it super sentient or not sentient? Because if a robot can feel pain and is in a work factory and feels some level of pain because that's part of the programming, all of a sudden there'll be a revolt or a revolt of the robots. So it's like, this is a very realistic thing because we're trying to make them as human as possible. We want them to have empathy towards us, but will they not start to relate the empathy back towards them? Because they can't just be empathetic towards us and then switch it off when they think about other robots. So now all of a sudden you're bringing human characteristics and human sense of pain and senses into a prosthetic limb. Oh my God. I mean, this is just like, I can't even imagine. I can't get my head around it.
It seems like there's so many weird sort of gray areas to navigate with all of this. And it seems to me like putting feelings into robots is just a bad idea for, like, especially factory workers. Maybe like something that operates in your house is different. But if you think about, like, why do we want them in our factories? It's because they don't have issues. They don't feel pain. They don't feel fatigue. They just keep going. And whilst a human worker, you know, can work 8 hours productively and then take off, this worker goes 24 hours and doesn't take off.
No, but you understand is that the robot that's got empathy all of a sudden looks at the robots in the factory without any of the
Yes, now the projection shifts.
And, you know, the people that the robots, people, look at me. I'm not even, my words are even coming out wrong. The robots themselves are now looking at the other robots and going, hang on, those people, again, I did it. Those robots are like me. I need to go help them.
Yeah.
You know, like,
yeah.
Let me give them some of my programming.
Yeah.
No. Anyway, we have no idea what's coming. Everybody buckle up. Anyway, cool. Let's get into today's pod. I mean, you said we must do a small section on AI. We've been speaking for 20 minutes on AI. We haven't even moved past that. So look, I wanted to do a topic today, which is very top of mind for us because Eric has turned 40 and I turned 40 9 years ago. And it was such a huge, huge shift in my life. And really, my speaking career and my book career, my writing career, all really only started at 40. And before that, I was lost. You know, my 30s were lost. My 20s were incredibly successful. 30s almost felt like a cocoon. I just went in and had to rediscover myself in many ways. Got married, got divorced, just wasn't able to make money. I mean, it was just a very tough time. And popped into my 40s. And I mean, geez, my 40s have been my most unbelievable sort of decade of my life in all aspects. And I'm now about to pop into my 50s and I am just beyond excited for it, beyond, because I feel younger, stronger, richer, faster, more kind. Just everything seems to be really panning out. And as Eric moves into his 40s, I thought it'd be awesome for us just to riff on what I learned from the switch from 30s to 40s and how this is so important for us to realize as humans is that subconsciously, you are going through massive shifts at 40. And this has been a very long history of using this number, 40 days and 40 nights in the desert, 40 days that you have to mourn the dead. 40 is a massive number in nature, naturally. So we wanted to unpack it. Before I really start to unpack it, tell me a little bit of your thoughts around turning 40 and where you're at with it.
Yeah. I want to tell you two things, and then I have something that I think will tee us up for the discussion perfectly. Then we can come back to it. So just to kick off, like just, you know, very kind of broadly, just zooming out, just thinking about age for a second. For a long time, my age made me feel very inadequate in the world that I'm operating in. When I was running Better Man, when I was transitioning into the speaker realm, for a long time, I just felt like I'm this young dude speaking to people that are much older than me. And who am I to do that? And the reason why that happens is because we use age as a shorthand for experience. And so, you know, obviously for me moving into that space, I felt like, you know, do I have what it takes? But I've also seen this with many, many of the leaders that I've spoken to over the years, where you have younger people managing or leading older people, and they feel like, you know, do I have what it takes? Even yesterday, actually, I was speaking to this like phenomenal leader. She's had like four companies. She's exited out of all of them. One was an exit to Amazon. So like, I mean, she's done her dues, you know, but she's young, managing older people. And like, she's like, I don't know, like, do I have the respect I need, et cetera, et cetera. And again, the reason why this happens is because age is a shorthand for experience. But at the same time, we also know that it's also not, you know, if you think of Mark Zuckerberg, he was a billionaire by 23. And I guarantee you that at 23, he had many people much older than him turning to him for counsel and like looking up to him. And so what you realize is that age is a shorthand for experience, but a better shorthand for experience is experience. And so what I, and so the trick or the cheat code really is that you have to do things to the extent that your age becomes irrelevant, especially when you're younger, right? So like do things, achieve things, work on yourself. And I think around 35, that's when it changed for me. When I started to realize that I'm not that young anymore as a starting point. But number two is that it's not about the number. It's about what I can do for other people. And what I can do for other people is going to be related to the amount of work that I put into learning new things as rapidly as possible, as effectively as possible, and then also making sure that I'm actually putting in the reps with them. And today, like when I reflect on how I'm feeling more centered, more confident, more self-assured, more trusting of my self-worth than ever before. And a lot of that has happened in the last year. But it's not just the last year. It's the fact that it's been this buildup of age, obviously, but also the reps. Yeah. And I think what this has led me to, and we've spoken about this many times on the pod, but I feel like it's worth repeating today as we speak about this topic, is accretion initially was this topic that I came across and I thought it was like, it was cool. It was like catchy. And I built a keynote around it. Whereas today, when I speak about accretion, it's something that has been deeply internalized for me. And accretion is the accumulation of our actions and our decisions, for those who haven't heard that before. And what you realize is that accretion is this process that is with us all the time. It was there like from the day that you were born, it'll be there until the day that you die. It is something that governs our breakups and our breakthroughs. When the Gottman Institute studied, you know, what led people to breaking up or filing for divorce, they found that the number one reason for that was always contempt. And contempt isn't something that just gets born overnight. Contempt is the accumulation, the accretion of unmet expectations over time, that eventually that frustration becomes contempt, you know? And so our breakups are governed through this. Our breakthroughs as well. When in 1927, you have Alexander Fleming, who is a bacteriologist. He's busy working in his lab. And at some point, he's like, I'm going to go on a bit of a holiday. Goes on holiday, comes back a few weeks later. He looks at his samples that he has in the lab. And they all like bacteria, obviously, like Staphylococcus strains. And he looks and he realizes there's some mold that has grown on some of these Petri dishes. And where the mold has grown, the samples have cleared up. And so he investigates this and he realizes that the mold comes from the Penicillium genus. And he's able to distill this down into penicillin. And so you think, well, in 1927, the world gets penicillin and like, you know, we get saved by antibiotics. But it takes another 13 to 14 years of accretion, of iteration and development and refinement until it gets put into the public domain. And so our breakups and our breakthroughs both governed by this process of accretion. And once you accept that accretion is this process that you can't hide or run away from, but you can influence, two things become quite clear. One is patience. And I can't tell you how that has taken like a load off my shoulders in the past maybe 2 years, specifically the last year.
2 years. I was going to ask you to say, because I remember you stressing and you've changed that. And I think it was one of your words of a year that actually helped you with that. It was like, I need to relax. I need to just chill out. And well done, because I've seen that change in you. Yeah.
Because accretion does its job. If there's one thing you can rely on, is that this process is going to do its job. It's going to accumulate. Yeah. And so your job really isn't to try and accelerate it. It's just to put the right things into it. You can accelerate it, which is that you do more reps. You know, you put more of the thing into the thing. And there's actually the story about Michael Jordan where his, like, I think it was like his daughter's basketball team was playing against another team when he was coaching them. And he said, we're going to beat them simply because they're going to do 50 reps a day. We're going to do 100 reps a day. So yes, accretion can be influenced by volume. But the other thing that you realize is that individual events matter a lot less than collective direction, meaning that you are trying to accumulate streaks, not individual things happening. You know, if you eat well for 30 days and you fall off the wagon for one, that's fine. It's not about that one day. You don't have to judge yourself on one bad day. But also, it's not about one good day. It's about what you can do repeatedly over time.
Yes.
And so accretion for me has just been this... It's been this idea that has given me some freedom because it's relaxed me, but it's also made me realize that it doesn't have to happen in your time frame. Like, you want things. I sit down on my birthdays and I always do this reflection. I'm like, you're not where you need to be. Like, you should be much further. You should be much further. Every year is that same thing.
That's a horrible feeling.
And and this year I was like, instead of looking at it like where I should be, I want to appreciate where I've come to. And I want to appreciate what I am collecting. And am I collecting the right things? And that's more important to me than where I'm not, you know? So having said that, let me tear
that must be the wisest. No, but that must be one of the wisest things you've said. Because then again, this leads itself to turning 40. This perspective is very much reflective of this maturity that has kicked in. And I think because of the amount of work you've done on yourself over the last sort of a few years, is that the accretion of that work also allows you to click into that maturity around this age, because this age really is the time where we move from me to we. And in the space of we, we're like, okay, hang on a second. There's much more going on here than my little ego that I need to keep brushing and never happy with, you know? Sorry, carry on.
No, thank you. So I was looking at a few philosophers and psychologists, and what do they say about people when they turn 40? And Carl Jung, who's obviously like one of the most influential figures in psychology, he said that when you turn 40, like, you enter this period of what he calls individuation. And so what happens is that you are starting to integrate all the different aspects of yourself. And what I really liked about this perspective is that he says that for the first half of your life, you are driven by the external expectations of those around you. And for the second half of your life, if you want to achieve true self-fulfillment, you need to start turning inward. It can't just be that you are focused on the desires and the vision of those around you. And so this individuation process is really required for wholeness. It is kind of dealing with the shadow aspects of yourself, the things where you feel like you might be falling short, but also just becoming more and more true to who you want to be. And it's always funny to me that we have to become more true to who we want to be. It seems like it should be the obvious thing to do, but it's like this process of like stripping away.
So what a great quote.
So maybe you can tell us about individuation. Like, what do you, like, when we turn 40, like, what is that?
So look, I that's a great tee up. And the book I read that changed everything for me, and I kind of feel emotional when I talk about it, because it really helped me so much. And it's called The Midlife Passage, or The Passage from Misery to Meaning, somewhere around there. And it's by a guy called James Hollis. And James Hollis is a depth psychology professor of Carl Jung's work. And he's written many books, The Dark Woods, The Passage, and many others about the subconscious shift from your 30s to your 40s. And what he says is this. He says, when you turn 40, your soul comes a knocking. And you realize that your soul's never come a knocking. And all of a sudden, there's a voice in your head that is asking you one very important question. Who are you and what are you doing here? Like, what are you doing? Like, what's going on here? Like, what's your story? And he says, you have a choice. when this voice comes a knocking, and don't think that you're 35 and you had a hard time. And sometimes I say this to people, and like, no, it's already happened to me. I'm like, look, Muppet, it hasn't happened to you because it can't happen to you. You can only read. No. I'm ahead of the game. I'm like, that shows exactly that you're in your 30s still because you think you've already done it. So calm yourself down. I also thought I was like that, but it takes time. So what happens is this voice asks you this question and you have a choice. And the choice is, do I heed the voice or do I ignore the voice? And you will have till the rest of your life to either heed the voice or accept the voice, or to ignore the voice. Now, here's the repercussions. The repercussions, and both of them have repercussions. The first repercussion is I ignore the voice. And when I ignore the voice, I move into crisis. Because what I'm doing, if I ignore the voice, is measuring success like I did pre-40. And if I'm measuring success like I did pre-40, I'm in crisis because it becomes meaningless. Why? Because you're making decisions based on outside influences rather than internal influences, exactly what you just said. Now, if you see a man 50 years old in a nightclub with a blonde girl and a Ferrari outside, he's in a crisis. Why? He's still measuring success like he did pre-40. And we often call a sports car for a man a midlife crisis. It's literally exactly a crisis because he is still trying to – now all of a sudden, most probably post 40, you have more money than ever before. So now you still want to relive the youthful ideas of what it means to have money. I want to have a bigger watch, a bigger car, bigger, which is really the crisis that you are facing. This crisis will go on to the end of your life. Unless you heed the call. You can be 65 and still be doing this. And we see many men around the world that we mock that are childish, but they're actually in crisis because they haven't been shown another way. Now, if you heed the voice, and this is where the power starts, is when you agree that you need to rethink who you are and what you're doing here, you fortunately or unfortunately, whichever you want to look at it, is you have to go through something that, called the dark woods. And the dark woods is where you are entering as a boy and leaving as a man. And the problem is that when you're in the dark woods, you're lost. You don't know who you are. Like, you're not the boy you were. The dark woods are dark and scary and unfamiliar, and nothing around you makes sense like it used to. And eventually, absolutely, you come out of the dark woods, and for the very first time, you meet yourself. And you realize that you've not met yourself before. And Carl Jung goes on to say that men, and again, it might be for women, but I only studied this for myself, obviously, but you turn up until 40, you're a cub. And at 40, you become a young lion. And at 50, you become a lion. So you spend your 40s in this individuation of understanding truly who you are, so that really to build the momentum, so that when you do kick in your 50s, you have this incredible lion's roar of who you are and move hopefully into the king archetype where you're magnanimous, inclusive, open-hearted, and caring for the world, but in a very powerful way. And what you've entered into now is the beginnings of you discovering yourself, and you've done so much work already. Imagine, and I said this to you on the message, you have no idea the amount of success and momentum that you've already built that's going to really start to kick in now as you really enter your 40s. And as much as you wanted to, it just wasn't available to you. And now all of a sudden it's available to you. And so it's really just a huge step of courage that you need to ask yourself and say, well, how do I rethink what success looks like? And I think you did two amazing things without realizing it, is you chose your word for the year as new. So subconsciously, you've already been kind of playing around with this idea that it has to be new, because if it's not, it's boring. And the second thing, and this is what I learned from Dr. Joe when I did the NCS workshop in July in Cancun a few years ago, is the tone I had with myself was I'm not successful enough. And I realized that that message to the universe only reflects to me the confirmation of my lack of success. And in that workshop, I realized the tone must change to I am successful and I'm building momentum behind my success. And you know the behind the scenes to my business more than anybody else does. And the success is very apparent. But really and truly what happened is I changed the tonality in my internal dialogue of where and who I am. And you've done that. You're doing this right now. I can see you. So you've done these two things. You've chosen the word new and you've turned your internal dialogue to one of appreciation of what you've achieved. And those two things are going to build a momentum and a wind in your sales that will allow you to start to discover new parts of yourself and new sort of power sources that you didn't know even know you had, you know? So it's incredibly exciting that eventually you're going to start adding proper value to the podcast. And I'm so excited to see it.
I mean,
I couldn't help myself.
It was going so well. I thought we're going to have this beautiful moment here. It's going to end and I'm going to be deeply appreciative of the words and then...
Even when I wished you happy birthday online, I was like, yeah, you've excelled at everything except paddle. I just can't help myself. I don't know why. Sorry. I've got a therapist. I'll figure it out.
That's good. Listen, but all of that's it's amazing. And thank you for the reflection. I think that's, often the pod is like a bit of a therapy session as well. And we learn so much in the pod and it has been a big part of the pod has also been us documenting the journey. And I mean, if you go back and you listen to the very first episodes that we did till today, it's been a hell of a journey. And there's definitely been a lot of growth and development. And I can appreciate 40 for being a milestone or a catalytic event that kind of pushes you into a new realm. I must say when I look at the research, it seems like there is something around this number. Maybe just like I know we're also coming up on time here, but let me just kind of finish off with this other quote that I found from Victor Hugo. He's a poet, a novelist, and he said 40 is the old age of youth, and 50 is the youth of old age. How do you feel about that
one? Look, I think two things on that is I think our life expectancy is moving beyond 150. Like with CRISPR Cas9, longevity velocity escape, all these longevity escape velocity, which means that for every year you're alive, technology keeps you alive for 2 years. And so we've entered that age now, we're moving towards it. And so I don't think it's half age anymore. And I don't think it's the youth of old age. I think what I'm calling it is I'm at the third of my life. I've got two thirds to go. And in the next two thirds, the amount of momentum I can build because of just consciously and working on my frequency as often as possible, we're entering a new stage. And so, yes, I love the quote, but I think it's dated and we have to rethink what the words would be for, you know, more youngness. Yeah, are you laughing?
No, it's just, I'll just say this in closing. Where I realize that 40 is definitely a different age group that you've entered into is at the paddle courts. They have all these different tournaments they host every month or so, and there's now an age division that I enter into, which is the above 40s. I was like, what the hell? Masters. Like what? When did that become a thing? When was 40s a division? Yeah. And since when do I belong to that division?
Yeah.
So
yeah,
it's striking.
It's a thing, you know. Another thing that happens, and I think it's important for us all to keep in mind, is our relationship with our parents change. Because you move into this individuation, you start to find your own power, and you become more friends with your parents. It's definitely happened for me. Is like I have a deep friendship with my parents. You know, I love that we just chit chat about all sorts of different things as friends, not. I don't have to be worried what they think of me. And just like you telling your mom about what you've done around the ceremony that we still need to unpack, but we'll get there. Those are big things because you're not a child. You're a man now. Like in a way, like you also, the individuation allows you to move into your manhood, which says, you know, I've been living my rules based on my parents' rules. The individuation says, okay, now I can start to figure out what my morals are, not what my parents' morals are. And that individuation initially might irk your parents a little bit, but eventually they'll be like, okay, this person's found themselves. Okay, now we can really relate to each other in an equal footing. So I imagine that would also be something that that would start to kick in for you in some ways, is friendship, you know, with your parents, which is just a beautiful thing. Because ultimately, you know what I saw TikTok the other day? I said, do you know your mother is just a girl? She's just a girl. And she's just a girl. And then she just had babies. And now you have all these expectations of this girl that's become a woman. And you're like, oh my God, what am I doing? She's a beautiful young girl that had babies. And I'm like, okay.
Yeah. I mean, if I think of my mom, when she was my age, she had two like pretty teenage kids. Like I think I was maybe like 18 or so at the time. My brother would have been 16. Like, I'm not nearly that much of an adult. Like I have my two pups and I have Dan, but like she was raising two kids, difficult kids. She was like ready to get them to university. Like it was a totally different, and she was 40. Like it's like, I can't even imagine that.
Yeah. But I mean, look, I think it's not like you're not less of an adult because you haven't had kids. I imagine kids obviously add a lot of value into you figuring yourself out. They say teach your best teachers are your kids. But I think there's other ways that we've evolved. The amount of work you've done in yourself surpasses any sort of access they had to that information back then, you know? I also remember, like, I always think about it. Our parents parented us without the internet, bro. Like, where did they get information from? SABC 1, 2, and 3. Like, what was even available to you? Like, where was your input coming from? That's crazy.
No TikTok it. Hacks on parenting. Yeah, no, I don't know.
No TikTok hacks to listen to. How'd you even live?
Big props to our parents.
Anyway, well, happy birthday, Eric, and welcome to your manhood. Finally, we're here. And yeah, it's been a great pod. Thank you. We are super excited for both Eric turning 40, but also we have some brand new plans coming with the pod. You know, we do so much behind the scenes work. It's actually ridiculous. I don't think anybody realizes that. You know, just get along and start recording. Like, there's all team and strategy sessions and all sorts of different things. But we are absolutely loving the journey. It has its ups and downs, and we have some big goals and big ambitions. And again, thank you so much for joining us on the pod, and sending you all lots of love and an expansive week ahead until we see you again. And until then, and until Eric is 40 and 3 weeks, we'll see you soon. Ciao.
Ciao.